Good evening. Tonight is September 11th, 2017. Tonight we're on our second lecture in our series, Enlightenment and Illumination. I really want to add to this alchemy, illumination and enlightenment. I want to add alchemy to the illumination and enlightenment that we speak of. And in the study of alchemy, we find that it follows on the current of the Catholic Church, the monasteries of Europe, and people that wanted to know about nature. It was a movement, a spiritual movement, that preceded the Rosicrucian movement. It was the preparation for it. So aside from the historical documents, I know all of you think in yourself that scholarship is what you want to understand when it comes to the world, but in relationship to spirituality, you can see that the material that we are looking at is the will of the soul. It's a very difficult material to study. So when we study history, we're studying the movements. In historical documents, they study army movements and things like that. We could spend all of our time doing that. So my friends, I want you to feel the appreciation in yourself for having the opportunity to study really the currents of spirituality as they're descending out of the spiritual worlds, and human souls that are willing to receive those spiritual impulses. And so today in our modern age, as a spiritual researcher, we feel the will impulse and then we try to compare it to what we have as the writings. So it's not difficult to feel that here is a continuation of something today that we find in our soul of something of an ancient character. So we're really looking for the mood of this spirit and how it remained pure in a certain sense, how it arrives today with new questions or old questions in new forms. And so the alchemists left behind them symbolic language characters. And we know them as chemistry. But they're really symbols and letters of words that the cosmos is writing. And that's what we find out when we begin to study the will, the impulses of will. Then when we look at the poets, we see the same sketchings. And you'll see these sketchings as concepts spread out through a number of different works. And these works also span things which we think of as separated in regards to religious colorings and religious affiliations. But we can only go so far as to say that we can see that an Eastern or Western religion or a poet that is influenced because he is of a certain age. Often it is that inspired poets can understand the inspirations and date those inspirations according to the maturity of the soul in regards to the spiritual emanation. I want to present these things to you so that you can get excited yourself for this very fine and specialized way of looking at history. In the university, you can study the rise and fall of civilization according to music. And people would say, well, that's really not history. But that's not true. The musicians that go through the music schools know this is certainly history. One can date the Renaissance through musical changes. It's far more important than laws and doctrines and documents. when one sees how the music also reflects the human soul in a much more intimate way. And why? Because one knows that one is dealing with secret knowledge, special knowledge, techniques, things that are known by a special small group of people, and then they move around. The people have to carry them. Now, why is that important for us? In our day and age, it's hard to understand what it is that would inspire you, for instance, and then to understand that when you carry a spiritual impulse from city to city, that it is an important thing. Many people have no understanding of the will of nature to be within the human soul and to be carried by the human soul from village to village, from place to place. If one expects knowledge to travel through the world just in the form of books, in that case, then one would not look for the things that we're speaking of here. So it's a very intimate thing that we're talking about. One has to become acquainted with the development of thoughts over a period of time. One has to feel how the thoughts work through the consciousness over time. And one has to feel and get acquainted with the importance of that. Now, thoughts are not just by themselves. They begin to relate themselves to our internal organization. And this is important because if you're going to do any kind of work in or below inside, you need to know what is creating the substances within you that relate to your thoughts, your moods, your feelings. What is it that gives you the power over the substance, over the mood, over the feelings? And that you can trace to the spirit as well. Thoughts within the human soul have a very special characteristic to them. In the souls of those human beings that develop, that spiritually develop and understand through their spiritual development, that they're in the soul, when they look at a substance within them, when they touch that substance within them, it also has a karma. That karma can be traced often to spiritual beings, to consciousness, to life, to soul life. And especially when we come to soul life, that we can feel, we know, we can identify with it. So I beg you to, I want you to really see how important this is when this is related to you. For this is a marked change in our human cultural development. That here, at last, we have a free form of spirituality. A free form. A form that relates to you how the soul moves itself within an atmosphere, an elemental world, a realm, a spiritual nature itself. When you examine the way scholars and professors of psychology look at psychology, you see that they're looking at something outside of them, as if they're looking at a body. Something which they talk about as if it's over there and over there. This particular work that we're talking about requires you to move the substance within you, to watch the substance, to be attentive to the changes to the substance, also to see how it moves out into the cosmic world, how the cosmic world works on it. And you need to know what we mean by cosmic world. We just don't mean a world where it just hovers out in space. What we're talking about when we say the cosmic world, we're talking about that which is between the human being and the living world. The living form of the spirit. So if a human being believes himself to be completely isolated and doesn't interact with anything, then we have the conditions where only an intellectual knowledge can evolve. So it begins to cut itself off. It has a logic which is based in its own internal realm structure. Now, if it goes out of that, it is more or less disappointed. The world itself begins to tear apart the intellectual. The intellectual has to conform to the world. We've given you many examples of this. For instance, if you're on the elevator, you're in an elevator and you want to go to the fourth floor, you should be able to, according to logical forms of the soul, you should be able to hit the two twice and get to the fourth floor. But that doesn't work. You have to conform to the structure of the external world. And in conformation to this structure, more and more you're led out into the worlds where you confront living forms. So then you can ask yourself, how do living forms come into being? A scientist says, here we have the stone, and the stone is on the ground, and then he looks at gravity, and he says, here's the gravity that holds the stone on the ground. That's as far as he can go. And he talks about the gravity like that. If that is truly the end of our inquiry, it is really to be blind to what is really happening within every human soul, including the scientist. It is an anomaly of our present age that human beings actually are involved in that one structural form of gravity and do not see what is really going on there. It is as obvious as looking at the sun rising in the east and setting in the west, you might say. And some people would disagree that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. And of course, in order to prove that to you, they show you from a perspective, don't they? And they say, here's the perspective, and this is the truth. But I want you to underline the word perspective. The perspective of you watching it rise in the east and set in the west is just as valid. Because you're talking about the perspective. What in truth the sun is doing and what in truth the earth is doing has many perspectives. And this is what is really true. If it's important for you to have the perspective that the sun does not rise in the east and does not set in the west, then it is important to follow that perspective. In relationship to poetic works, things that deal with your writing, your feeling of the influence of the sun rising, then you need to express it in the form that you perceive it. In fact, it's untrue to say it in any other way. To gain this versatility of the soul and the heart is extremely important. But until one sees the importance of structure, of systems, until one sees the importance of opening oneself to different systems and how they are constructed, until one does that, one doesn't really understand what is truth. One can believe or follow it to a certain extent that there is just a truth and everyone can comply to it. What is the truth is how our beings relate to the structures and perspectives that we are embodying. So when we want to say gravity is this way, we can actually say like this to the people that create the systems based on gravity. We can say this is for your system. It's very clear. And then we can even say here is the countergravity. What do you do with it? And this becomes interesting. We want to know that conversation. We don't want to know that it doesn't exist. We don't want to know that it's cut off or under the side of the universe and it doesn't have any validity. That is non-productive. What we need to do at the right moment is to engage a conversation so we can see how the mind shifts out of its one system and moves itself in, or is moved within itself to answer to another system. And in that answering, we discover the powers of our creativity, our creative mind. So, for instance, when we think of a tree or a plant, we know the plant is going against the gravity. This is an upward force. And when you look at the earth, you can say, here upon the earth is the realm where the things are working this way, and here's the realm where the things are working this way, upwards. As a human being, I want you to think that there is only one force that works in you. It's called gravity. And I want you to feel how it feels to just be acted upon by gravity. If you were in a creative class and we got you to experience this, you would say, I feel really heavy. You would say, I feel really heavy from this. And if you were to look at a plant in that form, if you were to see a plant in that form, they would also, in a certain way, mimic each other, the plant and the human being in his heavy form. The human being slouches over, so does the plant. If it's only gravity that works upon the human being, then the human being slouches over. And he feels tired. He feels heavy. Something is missing from the life. Have you noticed this? This is something that you can feel in your soul. This is not a mathematical thing. Now, if we're in a classroom and people are learning about gravity, they write it down with all kinds of numbers and formulas. But just think, there's another way. Reflect upon this. There's another way to learn this gravity. And it's not just the gravity that you're required to learn in order to really have a comprehensive knowledge. It's something that lifts you up. For yourself, the thing that lifts you up is not just a counter concept to gravity. You can't just say, I'm going to be up. Well, some do that. They actually say, I'm going to be up. And it works. It works for a time. But when it's in your soul to identify with the power that helps you to be up and in a strong way, how the body can attach itself to activity that gives it the upliftment. So when you look out around you and you see the plants and their power to have a crown, have a canopy of leaves, and there we feel the expansive nature of the tree. It's everything the opposite of what gravity would do. And we can feel how we can excite this power within us. And life in a human being is excited, is powerful, is strong, is courageous, is also connected to our fortitude. It's connected to our strength. And this strength has to do with how true our thoughts are, how full and rich the truth is. Now, previously in the lecture, we spoke about the versatility of the thought. And when you're confident to be able to spread your thoughts across a world that has a wide range of variables that's constantly changing across the world, then you are going to be able to experience life. Have you ever tried to place life in such a perspective that it has an unchanging character? Well, then you must have a sleeping human being in that sense. You must have a sleeping organization. Not even any life. There's not any life that isn't involved in the processes of change and the forming of the new, cleansing the old, things like that. And so when we take on spirituality, we know we are also in a movement. When we think of the movement of evolution, we think of the movement of the soul towards something really wonderful. Then we know this is an uplifting force, something that we want to awaken to. We want to get out of our beds to get up to experience. Now, when we go into our sleep, when we go into our rest, and a beautiful experience is there as well, there we feel how the spiritual form of taking us into the realms of the spirit takes over. A spiritual gravity, a connection to the mother, a connection to laying down and feeling the warmth of the beauty of the spiritual. We pour these concepts forth for you and for us to experience, because this becomes now the reflection of the truth of the human content of his soul. This settles our bodies down. It settles them down in such a way that we move away from the mathematical truths, and we come then to the caressing, intimate nature of our own soul being. This is an enlightenment and an illumination, but also the substances, the will of the world, the powers that have to move our substance are still there in order to be expressed and examined. In order for a human being to be free enough to examine these simple processes takes still a spiritual courage and a lot of spiritual knowledge and work. It takes a discipline of the soul and the heart and the nature. Peace, tranquility, surrender, virtue. All these have to be present within the soul in order to get it to be calm to all the different things that could plague the human soul on its way to these feelings, on the way to creating these feelings, because it is the nature of the physical world in our perceptions, the will that flows through those perceptions, which is to corrupt the human being. Say, no, you're not good enough for this. How about this over here, and how about that? And it takes away the purity. It drives us down into the lower form of the human nature. Perhaps you don't know about that, and perhaps you do know about that. But it is that the soul has different structural layerings. Namely, that which we call the astral nature, or the desire nature, that which is the will nature, that which in you activates to have substance of the spirit that draws itself to you, It has a lower nature and a higher nature. You can sort the two out. If you strengthen your higher nature against your lower nature, if you strengthen that higher nature, the benefit in the soul is to ennoble the body, to enrich and ennoble the soul in its feelings is going to bring about a beauty of the body, a beautification. The reason is because that which is in the lower nature of the human being, that also drags human into the animalistic. When spiritual development begins, we are able to see what leads into the corruptions. The I itself reveals for us the desire nature of a human soul. We can see our own desire nature in our own eye. That desire nature is not the ego. The desire nature in the lower form will try to overpower our ego nature. It overpowers it if one gives over to it. One has to give in to it. So you can feel, I'm giving in to my passions. I'm giving in to this lower nature. Sometimes karma demands this. In order to create life, in order to create families and children, there has to be somewhat of a lower nature within the human being that becomes active. As this activates within the human being, he makes choices along the way, and eventually he or she has to ennoble that nature. Both men and women have to ennoble the lower nature and arrive at a higher nature. If the human souls involved in this lower nature activity continue with their passionate forms, it eventually destroys, utterly destroys the physical and the etheric nature. The whole point being that the human being cannot perpetuate or live in perpetuity. He cannot live in perpetual fire. One has to learn that the astral nature is a fire. We introduce that fire nature into the physical nature. If we introduce the fire nature into the physical nature for fertility, then we have introduced into it something that brings about a justification for this usage of the light and the fire. In regards to this, we have only so much fire because of another related fact. And that fact relates to this. The substance which fuels the fire is limited. It has a limited growth, just like our trees. We have a limitation upon us when we think of the fire and the substance upon which it must grow. And this interaction of human beings, when it arrives at a level of wisdom and speaking and conversing, there can be given between human souls a beautiful language, something different than that awful and very square or harsh language that is based on right and logic and things like that. People think this is the way to do it, and you need a desire for it, and that's it. But when souls have understood the principles of need and want and desire, and then ennobling those, taking those passions upwards, and filling the upper form of the soul with light, they begin to have compassion for each other. Now, if they don't have compassion for each other, they begin to complain to each other. We can supply each other, human beings, in relationships can supply for each other the will to create. And that will can extend so far as we undergo transformations of our soul. We need to carry into ourselves the fire. That fire is going to illumine for us the lower form, which is going to appear as a very powerful whirlwind kind of thing, something that we would experience if we were to let loose a forest fire. Now, it's a great and wonderful power, and we feel really good in unleashing it, don't we? If we can gain the picture that this is really a forest fire, something of a forest fire, an anomaly or something that appears similarly, something as a simile. And so we look into the external world in nature for the simile to ourselves. And this is an art. You can see this in the development of literature, in storytelling, especially the storytelling that has to do with the masters or the poets that are going to express the forms of spirituality that you're acquainted with. So when a storyteller appears within your groups, that's because he is able to feel the flowing of the elemental powers through the organs. And these organs are related to the karma. I want you to understand that your organs activate and give you the karma that you have. It's a secret of nature to see not just those organs are active, but other ones too. People interact with the activation powers of karma. That's what brings about love between human beings. It's not just one form of interaction. Imagine when people play or swim or wrestle or do other activities. That is activation. That is activating the inner as well as the outer. When we feel how the light moves with this fire force and what we're doing within ourselves to create like this. So if we say, here we have one force over here, and we are more or less in a good way towards that force, if we have no will to lift it into a higher form, but leave it as a lower form, it may be that our karma becomes catastrophic. That's right. It's an important thing to understand this, that when you're undergoing changes through spiritual development, it's important to understand that your karma also has to upgrade itself according to your enlightenment. So you're moving the force from one lower nature, one form of your being, which is the lower nature, into the higher nature. And if you can succeed in doing this, there is this great, enormous benefit to yourself, to your whole life. To create a vision of that is to create a vision also in yourself of something of your future. So this is truly the experience of creating karmic substance. You begin to see a vision of your future being. If you're vague about your future and your future being, if you're vague about how you want to look and how you want to see yourself, if you can't see yourself like that, then you're going to put obstacles in your path of spiritual development. The spiritual beings have to do this. They have to extract from a human soul the picture of the possibility. So they have to examine the human soul of what is possible. But when you're in your soul as a conscious being, you can see in the enkindling fire within yourself what is possible for yourself too. And you can lift this into the sphere of the realms of the angels where they can feel and sense it. This can lead to health and healing because your interactive power with the angelic worlds is something that you can feel. You begin to sense, oh, I've been received. I've been uplifted. My soul has been lifted out of me, and now I feel it's coming back to me in a cleansed form, in a calm form, in a serene form. These activities of working in this way, and then all the way to feeling the transformation of your substance and the foundation of your being in a healthy way, the reformation of your being, all of this together gives a certain feeling of bliss, of peace, of mastery for the human being. When we look at our fellow men and we see how nervous they are, and then when we examine it and we can say, is it in the physical nature? No, we don't find it in the physical nature. But one can predict that soon enough it moves out of the soul into the physical. So the nervous nature in the soul is something to deal with and contend with. How we deal with it, how we contend with it, is going to also determine the health of our being in the days to come or the years to come. If you become confident in an uplifted way, if you become confident, I have lifted myself up and above my lower nature. I have, through work, diligent work, work every day to build my nature up, to build my soul up, to build my confidence and my strength and my courage. There comes a time, through time, when this soul is able to feel the benefit of all that work, begins to collect. And so the illumination of our inner life reveals to the soul, reveals to the eye consciousness, what the desire nature is up to, what the desire nature wants to do. So when those desires are given over to us to say, I want to work in this way, I want to build myself, I want to build myself in this form, this begins to retroactively work back into the human soul, into the human body. It begins to penetrate through. And out of this comes that human being, which we think of as the future at a certain point, and it's the future coming into the present. This is the path of the human soul to receive itself into itself. This is the path of illuminating the greatness of the human being, the power of feeling his life spirit. So now when you look through your eyes into the world of nature, and there what is spread out in front of you is the will to do exactly as the human being does. Only the mineral reserves itself in that form of the gravity. Only the mineral is feeling itself in the opposite direction in that sense. But the other creatures are feeling the upliftment. They want that upliftment. And the substance for the upliftment comes, as you might guess, it comes from the human being. The human beings of the earth are creators of this very special substance. It is the spirit that emanates from human beings that permeates and forms itself in such a way that it ensouls and inspirits the rest of the earth. And so when Jesus says that humans, ye are the salt of the earth, he's talking about it in the spiritual sense. And he thinks of it in this form of the mineral, which is really interesting. But this mineral, when you put it into water, it flavors the whole of the water. And so the human soul has flavored the earth. The salt that when you take, there's an alchemical process which people use today, which is quite common today in common usage. The people that want to flavor olive oil, they use a technique often, which is based on a principle of alchemy, and they'll burn the salt. They'll burn the salt and warm the oil up, and they'll burn the salt on a fire. And if they burn any other substance with the salt, with the fire, and the olive oil is near, then the olive oil will absorb that flavor. So they don't need to soak, for instance, garlic in the olive oil. They just need to burn it with the salt. And then that flavor moves into the olive oil. The flame and the fire and the salt together give the opportunity to flavor this oil. It's a very, very interesting mystery process. But when we think of ourselves as being the salt of the earth and having the fire that we've just talked about, then we also fill the earth with a certain spirit. If the fire is within you and the fire is of a higher nature, you lend over to the earth the beauty of that fragrant form of your own being. In order for the earth to receive the human soul in a higher form, the human soul also has to be able to find the higher nature, has to work towards it. And so there's plenty of beings in the spirit, out of the realms of the spirit, that are available to assist human beings. There are plenty of beings that are also there to corrupt the human soul, to lead it into forms of corruption, and to upset the higher nature powers that are, and the powers that are connected to it. The reason is that the earth registers the time in a certain way related to the lower and higher natures. If a great number of human beings were to supply the earth with a higher spirituality, and the lower spirituality began to diminish upon the earth, then it would be that certain substances of time would no longer be necessary. Then the earth would no longer produce those substances for those beings. And the Earth would move into the next evolutionary cycle. So it is that there is the power of spirituality to hold the Earth back or propel her forward. And to propel the Earth forward is also to pour into the human soul, to give to the human soul something back, to be able to receive from the Earth, to be able to receive a spirit from the Earth. In order to map this out, in order to make this possible, human beings had to configure themselves as pioneers in the development of this. They had to go past what is normal in the human life wave. They had to take within themselves powers and forces which increasingly became more and more dangerous. But in mastering these forces, they were able to subdue over time corrupting demonic forces of the elemental world. And in that case, these adepts of the human life wave can disseminate a teaching and map those areas so that human beings, people, participants in the spiritual life, can pass through these realms now unharmed and avoid the dangers of them. And so what is preserved for our spiritual development then has the possibility to descend into us in a pure and ever pure way. Then the evolution shortens. It's the same as if we were to say, here is a master flautist, now he should teach the young. And what he teaches to the young is how to avoid all the pitfalls that the master flautist had to spend his whole lifetime learning. So now we've shortened the time. Do you see how that works? Do you see what we're saying? And so the young forces can receive the master teaching. Those that are old and corrupt or corrupted, they move a little slower and they don't have the same activity. Those that are young can receive the forces of mastery and for a full lifetime go a long, long way in carrying these forces again through the earth, through the human soul, into activities, into thought, into heart, into feelings. And so the system, the perspectives, the poetry, the beauty of life is based on our individual unfolding of it. That spirit which hovers over the earth plays back into the youngest forces, the fresh forces, the virginal forces coming into life. And so this is to illumine for us the powers of karma, powers of the spirit, how they are active within the human soul to bring about changes in the earth, nature, and in man. All of this is dependent upon the will of the human soul to ennoble itself, to enlighten itself, to illumine within itself its nature, to open it up with light, and to move into that realm, to nurture that realm and give it with each day more and more of the power of the soul. Power of this soul is gained on one end by the elemental world of the earth. And they move into the human soul. They move into it as an elemental power. They move into you. And they expand into that soul life and carry the seeds of immortality, of perpetuity, not just fire and passion, but the beauty of the life. The health, the well-being, the structure, the perspectives of the whole of that human soul life, how it has formed as a living organization. So for each one of you students of the Spirit, it is to put all of your being in order in this way, in a pure and beautiful and noble way. Then what flows into you from the worlds takes up and fills this up with the spirit of the world. And it begins to lend to you eyes and ears and limbs of your spiritual body. Thank you tonight for listening to our second lecture in our series on illumination and enlightenment. And also, this is something of an alchemy for us. The alchemists at the beginning of our age wanted to know about nature. They wanted to know about the minerals, the will of it. And the will of that nature really always was to bring about illumination, fire. To understand, one needs fire. The alchemists knew this, but how to use that fire in relationship to the soul takes a maturing of our spiritual nature and our soul nature. So in our subsequent lectures, we're going to learn more about how to work the substances of the soul and the elemental worlds.